From Hypebeast Radio, I'm Jeff Staple, and this is The Business of Hype, a show about creative entrepreneurs, brand builders, innovators, and the realities behind the dreams they've built. Man, Shirt is a weird one. It's hard to define him. To me, he's a true artist, and he's merely showcasing his art form in the form of rap music right now. Occasionally, he'll cross over and incorporate other elements of artistry into his music as well. Now, I've known Shirt for a long time. Full disclosure, he used to intern at Staple and work at ReadSpace. And back then, he was honing his craft as a lyricist. He'd make really interesting music videos, some t-shirt graphics. He'd make social political statements about street culture, hype culture, sneaker culture, and just art in general. Have you seen those shirts that have an Adidas and Nike logo on them? Yeah, Shirt made those. So this guy George, aka Shirt, he's been writing rhymes for years and doing little appearances here and there. And I mean, everyone listening to this podcast probably has a friend who dreams of being a rapper, right? Well, Shirt, in my opinion, I always knew there was something special about him. I knew he'd blow one day. And if it hasn't happened yet, it's only because the world hasn't caught up yet. And recently, one major part of the world actually did catch up. Jack White of the legendary White Stripes, who owns the infamous Nashville-based record label Third Man Records, announced that their first hip-hop signing will be none other than Shirt. So the reason why I wanted to get Shirt at this exact moment is because of where he came from, which in all honesty is not much, and how he scraped and hustled to where he is now, and how everything he has learned up until this point will affect what might happen in the future. You get to listen to this moment, and then observe in real time what no one knows the answer to. What will become of the artist named Shirt? All right, so let's start. Start with introduction, who you are, what you do, who am I sitting with right now in the studio. In my first New York City recording, the premiere of Business of Hype in the Empire State, who do we have?
Shirt. From New York, by the way, from Queens.
Say that again.
Shirt. Shirt NYC on the social channels and all that, but just Shirt.
Okay. Shirt NYC on the socials. All right.
Yeah.
Shirt, what do you do?
I make things. I make music. I like to like really like think about things. Mm-hmm. That's like what I do. It's a lot of thinking.
Yeah. I think some people know you for different categories mm-hmm. of professions, maybe. Like, I feel like some people know some of the work you do, but completely not some of the other work that you do, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to now, hopefully, like, people can, you know, there's one entry point and then they can, like, find the other stuff, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But I try to do that.
Okay, so if someone's, like, having a conversation with you, like a stranger, like you meet him on the plane, and he's like, mm-hmm. oh, so what do you do?
That famous plane,
yeah.
When someone on the plane asks you. Yeah, I say I make things.
Come on.
No, I say I make things. Now I can say, like, I'm a student. Like, in the past, it's definitely been something where it's, like, I'm very conscious of, like, what happens when you say, like, I rap. And if you're not the most, like the most, like, super, you know, like, famous person, you just look like a bum.
Yeah. Because so, it's like if you say you rap, but yeah. they've never heard of you, then they think...
Like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. yeah.
So I would, if I'm comfortable, I might say that I rap, but it's very quickly like, oh, I make things. And like if they say like, oh, like a lot of people see the music, like the tattoo and be like, oh, you make music. And then I'll mm-hmm. say, yeah, rap music. And then mm-hmm. I'll be like, okay.
Can you recount a story where like when you've told a stranger like, yeah, I rap, that it went very interestingly afterwards?
Usually people want to get out of the conversation really quickly at that point. Like, they're like, this guy has nothing to offer.
Or he's gonna shoot me.
Yeah, like something ridiculous like that, or right. like some stereotypical thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's usually me, like, if it's just like somebody asking like a vain question or just like an on-the-surface question, I'm trying to get out of the conversation faster. So I'm just like, yeah, I rap, and like, if it's just in passing, like, mm-hmm. and then I'm out. Like, I'm not trying to like linger on.
Which is why the airplane question mm-hmm. is so key, because you yeah. can't escape that situation.
Yeah. So, okay, so I was just on a flight, and these two like young guys were next to me, and I forget what I was wearing, but it was like something that they knew of, and they mm-hmm. were like, oh my God, like, blah, blah. Actually, I think it was one of my hoodies as well with the Nike checks down the sleeve.
Okay.
And the guy was like, yo, like, where'd you get that? And that's always a weird thing because it's like the minute you say, I made it, it opens up this whole world of questions that if you're not in the mood to, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes I won't even say that I make stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, you could find it. Like, I tell them, like, my website, but it's, like, outside of myself.
Okay. That's what happened this time?
No, so this time it just so happened that I was, oh, I made it. And then they started asking questions. But then I, like, very quickly, I, like, put my headphones on. Like, but there was a bunch of questions because it was, like, young guys. Like, they were, like, trying to talk about it.
But you did, one of those, as you slowly put your headphones 100%. On.
100%. And then they even stopped me at some point. They were like, oh, let's exchange IG.
Uh-huh.
So literally, I had to give them my IG because I can't say, like, I don't have one. Like that.
Why do you say that begrudgingly, that you had to give them
because
my IG?
Because you're sitting next to someone then, and, like, it's just weird. Like, they're looking at my whole life right next to me, and I'm there if they want to ask questions, and I don't want them to ask. You know what I mean? It's just, like, a weird... It's type weird. But now this is, like, happening more. And it's, like, very... My friends are, like, making fun of me.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, happening more and more where someone will either, like, ask me something or they'll know who I am or something like that. And it's, like, it's very strange.
Yeah. Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Your name is... Your artist name is Shirt. Do you want to reveal your government on this podcast?
George.
Okay, George. You don't want to really... reveal your last name.
No, what's the point of that?
Social security number? No.
No.
Okay.
No, no.
All right. Shirt.
Yeah.
Why Shirt?
That was so Oprah. That was amazing, just the way you said it. Let's see. I don't know, rap name. I always felt like rap names are, like, ridiculous. Like,
hold
it
on.
Doesn't okay.
Why did you think you needed a rap name?
Because everyone has rap names. Like, it's just a thing. Like, if you're going to... I don't know. It was the thing to do.
Were you
like,
already...
Why wasn't I just George? I don't know. Because that's not a cool rap name. I don't know. Like,
no, but like, so you're writing rhymes at what age?
Very young. But I went through a few names.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was always like some like just ridiculous, kind of like whatever. But then I came across T-shirt. Mm-hmm. And I forget what was the catalyst of that, but it was definitely like, oh, that's funky and like
you forgot, one of a kind. You forgot why you named yourself T-shirt?
Well, I was making T-shirts,
okay.
So I know that much, but I don't know why I was like, oh, this would be like a funky name.
Yeah.
But I do remember that I went to like a video shoot at the old Limelight at the church, and it was a video shoot, and I went up to the security, and I knew the artist, and they like had to walkie that I was at the door, and they were like, oh, like, what's your name? And I was like, T-shirt. And the guy was like, T-shirt, like, the fuck? Like, but basically that whole day at the video shoot, like, video shoots are super long, like, that whole day, every time that security dude saw me from, like, across the room, he'd be like, T-shirt, like, and it was like, I remember that specifically as, like, there's something to this name that makes him want to scream it, and girls really liked it and all that.
It worked,
yeah. But then a lot of people also was like, it's a stupid name. But my rebuttal to that was like, what rap name is not... Like, there's a top rapper named Eminem, and we accept it. Like, you're not going to tell me, like, T-shirt's the dumbest name ever. It's not. Like, but I do like Shirt a lot better because, like, people used to spell T-shirt really weird.
Yeah.
Like, and I was just like, yeah. And then they put the dash or the dot and all this stuff, and I was just like, this is... So I like Shirt a lot better.
Okay.
And it's just like, I don't know, it's like the older version of T-shirt. It's just Shirt.
And you weren't concerned, because I've known you for a while.
Yeah.
Now, and in the beginning, I remember I was like, George, you should change your name from Shirt because it's really hard to Google.
Yeah.
But you stuck with it. I'm proud of you that you stuck with it.
Yeah.
But it didn't dissuade you.
A lot of people told me I was crazy. But also, it's kind of like... There's some, I can't think of off the top of my head right now, but there's some rappers that have names that are like other things. Uh-huh. It's really just about, it's like a funny thing to say, but if you write Shirt Rapper, it's all coming up.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not a real thing.
Okay.
If you can't find my stuff, like, you're bad at Google. Like, that's just what it is. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there should be a school for people who are bad at Google.
Yeah, exactly. And we actually just looked at the Wikipedia of like Shirt. And it's going to be cool because it's going to have like one of those things where it's like, you know, other uses.
Yeah.
And then I'm going
to
be...
If you're looking for garments to wear on your body, exactly. Click this link.
Right. So like, it's fine.
Whether you're a musician, a fashion brand, a store, or a media company, no matter what, when you decide to start your company, the first thing you're going to need to do is decide on a name. And you can bet your life that the second thing you'll be doing is arguing with people who think that name sucks. The name of a brand is obviously so important, but I gotta agree with Shirt here. The name doesn't really matter as much as the product that backs it. When I first started out, people thought Staple was a weak name, and they thought ReedSpace was an odd name for a store. In fact, I kind of thought so too. I almost deliberately didn't put so much emphasis into the brand name, and I put more effort into the products. Hell, there's a company called A Bathing Ape that has been killing it steadily for decades. How do you think approval meetings for that name went? So here's the takeaway. Yes, your name is important. Yes, your logo is important. But it's not even a tenth as important as what it all represents. So put the time into that. Trust that people will get used to remembering what you want to call your brand.
Okay, so we alluded to this before, but like, when did you start writing?
Very young. Like my mom, I really credit my mom is a writer. She's always written for herself. There's not much stuff that she's published, but like always written for herself. Mm-hmm. And she played the piano and wrote pieces on the piano as well. But like very quickly, I mean, it was like started off as like a poem.
Poems, right.
And stuff to get girls and like write like little things and stuff like that. But then very quickly it was on beats. It okay. was like on like, you know, the beats of the 90s, like what Bad Boy was doing. And
yeah. But how old were you?
So I did spit a verse at 9 years old.
Okay.
I did.
That's dope.
Yeah.
On
like
beat.
On like a DJ's tape in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, like in the beginning I used to say, oh yeah, I've been rapping since I was 9. That's not really like yeah. I I was rapping at 9 and I was like, but you're 9 years old. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was like much later that I started making records and right. like releasing records and like, you know, that.
I like that you were very clear that like I spit a rhyme at 9.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Almost by accident.
I actually like... didn't. I wrote it with another guy. So like it was really funny.
Yeah.
But I didn't even really write it that verse at 9. But it was like 8 bars or something like that.
And this is in New York City?
This is in Queens.
Queens.
Yeah.
All right. So musically, take us to what was going on like in Queens.
Bad Boy was the hottest thing in the world.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was really just like, yeah, Bad Boy and Puff and Big and Mace were like everything.
Yeah.
And then I remember... some kids from Marcy Projects mm-hmm. were the ones that put me onto Jay-Z mm-hmm. and Rockefeller and all that. And I knew who they were and everything, but like I was really about Bad Boy.
Yeah.
And they put me on because they were from Marcy Projects uh-huh. and they were like, nah, like Jay's the guy.
Yeah.
And they gave me the VHS tape of The Streets Is Watching
mm-hmm.
and all that. And that was when I was like, okay, Rockefeller is like really dope.
Okay.
But I even remember even earlier than that, like really young, I remember like Heavy D,
uh-huh.
like Let It Rain, like those records, like... But it's really fun. I like in home videos when I was like really, really young, I was in the videos with my hat to the side, but going, yo, 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 what's up? Like, and I have just no idea like where that came from. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. Maybe just growing up in New York, like the guys that I saw that I wanted to be like that were the coolest guys were like hip hop guys in
right.
a sense. I don't know.
So you just like.
Just took the style just immediately. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess.
Were you also creating, you said you're like a creator of things, right? So other than music, poems, and rhymes, mm-hmm. were you also dabbling in other forms of creativity?
Yeah, Jackson Pollock was like a huge early inspiration. Like
when you were 9, you're like into Jackson Pollock.
Not 9, but like maybe like, yeah, my teenage years, like
okay.
early teenage
So you were studying artists.
I found Jackson Pollock and I was like, holy shit, like the creative freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you know, you see things and you think that it has to be one way. And then, like, a guy like Pollock
mm-hmm.
challenged everything.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any schooling or any kind of, like, education on art. But just visceral, like, the visceral experience of seeing what Pollock was doing, throwing
yeah.
paint on the canvas. I was like, holy shit, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
So a lot of my early paint, I was making big paintings that looked like Pollock.
Mm-hmm.
And a few friends still have them. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, they have dirt in them and, like... paint and dirt and like sticks like from the ground like
yeah.
I was like I really wanted like a texture
uh-huh
so the paint like the paintings are kind of ridiculous
yeah yeah
there's a couple that I really really like there's a couple that I don't like the colors a lot
because
mm-hmm. like the colors you choose are like a big thing of anything they can make or break a thing
mm-hmm.
So some of the early color schemes were just like not that great, but then a couple I hit like right on the head, and they stand the test of time.
Wow. Okay. So you're creating art. You're still creating music. Did you think, like, in high school, let's say, did you think either of these could be like a career for me?
I was rapping in high school. I was rapping in the lunchroom, and like people, the minute I started rapping for people, a lot of people were like, you have the voice for it. Mm-hmm. And that was like a big thing that I was like, if I have the voice for it, like the writing, you can like continue to get better. The voice thing is more of like, you got to be born with that or you're not. Like,
yeah.
So when they said that, I was like, damn, like maybe I could do this. But it was never, this is going to sound crazy. I guess that this is going to sound crazy, but because I grew up in New York and just the way that I like looked and just like acted natural and had this like affinity for like, I was like a people person, like big smile all the time. Like I felt like I could, like, what's the difference between me and the guys that are making it? Like I can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very much from the beginning, like, nah, I could definitely do this.
Yeah.
It was just about, I think when anybody's like making stuff, there's like a famous, like they talk about the transition period where it's like, your taste level and what you can make don't match, so you feel really whack about the shit that you're making because your taste level is so much higher.
Yeah.
And they say that you just have to like keep working until like it reaches your taste level.
Gotcha.
And
so you knew back then that it wasn't good enough yet, even for yourself, really.
Yeah, but I knew that I was like really just like, I just have to stay alive and keep making stuff. And I'm going to, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Speaking about just staying alive.
Yeah.
I know a little bit later on, this is like sort of getting out of school now. Did you finish college?
No.
Did you go to college?
No. So I dropped out of high school.
Okay. So you didn't finish high school?
No. Well, I got my GED.
Okay.
Immediately.
Okay. So you didn't finish high school, but you're in a master's program right now, which we're going to get to.
Yeah.
But I want to remember that. So you didn't finish high school. You didn't go to college. And you said like, you said something just now, like, I just knew I needed to stay alive.
Yeah.
But I know that there was parts
that's
of your life.
That's been my thing nowadays. I've been thinking about it a lot. Like, people shouldn't be, like, saying, like, I need a job. Your job is to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to make money to live in this world. Yeah. But you don't necessarily need a job. The job is to stay alive.
Right. But there was a moment where, like, I remember, you know, where you thought, like, this is so hard.
Yeah.
That, like, I don't know if I can keep going with trying to make this dream come true.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much because of financials, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't really anything else. It was that, I was, like, dead broke. And I come from, like, nothing. Like, my family, like, there's nothing. So,
right.
So I really just had to, like, I had nothing.
Uh-huh.
And I just had, like, jobs in the city just to, you know, like, once I moved out of my mom's house, I had to, you have to pay rent.
Yeah.
And you have to pay your cell phone, and you have to, like, have some money to take girls out and things like that.
Right.
And buy some clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, trying to balance all of that, you're completely broke.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time you got paid to rap?
Yeah. Yeah. So, the first time was in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And my music caught the ear of a guy that was, like, working for, like, music supervision.
Which is what?
The guys that put the songs in like shows and stuff like that.
Okay.
So he was working for a company in LA.
So Music Supervision is a company that decides what music goes on television shows and movies.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And like even other things. You can hire those guys for a lot of different things.
Okay.
Yeah. And now those guys even curate like the playlists for restaurants and things like that.
Okay.
But he was like an early fan and he brought my music to like the heads of the company and I signed a publishing deal. Like a very small publishing deal, but mm-hmm. It was for thousands of dollars, but still like very small. But it was like at that point, I was like making real money.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when your songs go into things like this, you make money forever.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a constant streaming thing and mm-hmm. like the royalties of stuff. So like it might not be a lot if it doesn't get streamed a lot, but you're getting checks, you know, every few months.
So let's break
that was a huge thing.
Let's break this down for the listeners who are trying to get to this level, even to just that level, mm-hmm. right? So explain.
I was putting so much music on the internet.
Yeah, you were on SoundCloud.
Completely ignored
it. Yeah.
Even before SoundCloud, like, you know, Audio Mac, all these like little things you could just like upload your music
to. Okay.
And I was so I started a blog mm-hmm. as well. So I had this blog, and I was like, it was like lifestyle stuff and all that. But in the middle of all that lifestyle stuff, I was like, new release and things like that, like trying to drop songs and tapes and stuff like that. But like doing that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like even now to this day, a lot of bloggers and like I know these guys from years ago when I annoyed them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's even like there's some guys that I haven't met like yet, like, but there's like a weird thing because I was so annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like so persistent, and I was like so like, no, but I'm the best. Like you got to hear my shit.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of those guys just ignore you, yeah. Which is like ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So you're making, when you say you're making music, you're like making it in your apartment?
Yeah.
On your laptop?
Yeah.
So you're making music and just putting it straight out. You don't have studio time yet, yeah. Nothing.
No. This is like, my girl took out a Guitar Center card.
Uh-huh.
And I paid her back, but she put like $2,000 on a Guitar Center card.
Mm-hmm.
And I got like a mic, speakers, you know, headphones.
Yeah.
I was just recording everything myself.
Okay. So you put it out, and then this company
yeah.
reaches out.
Yeah.
So you said you get a publishing deal. Explain that.
So yeah, they reached out. They came to New York. They took me to lunch. It was like the first time that I was like doing anything like that. It was like really crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, we eventually, it was like a small deal, and it was for like a specific amount of records. It was for 10 records.
Okay.
And then the idea was to put some of those records into things, but then also make an EP from that.
Mm-hmm.
So basically that happened in 2011, but by like 2015 is when the EP of that relationship dropped.
On what label?
Did they have a label? I think, you know what happened? That was the Closed Sessions. So there's a label in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and they're like an indie label.
Mm-hmm.
But I forget how I got reached out to them, but basically like they came on to like help distribute the album.
Okay.
But it wasn't a record deal. It was like, yeah. It was just this EP like for them to help release it.
Okay. So you have to, so this contract says yeah. make us 10 songs.
Yeah.
And we're going to pay you how much, if yeah. you want to say.
It was like $20,000.
Okay. Which is amazing.
Fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And that was just like upfront.
Upfront.
So and that then, has nothing to do with the money that if a song gets picked up into yeah. something, now you're getting paid from ASCAP, you're getting royalties, you're getting all that. Like this was just so that they can like play ball with me, which was like ridiculous. And
right.
I was like, yo, I'm writing records for thousands of dollars. Like,
yeah,
I
no, made can, it. Like, so you're like making music
yeah.
with a $2,000 Guitar Center credit card,
yeah.
putting it up on various websites, and then someone says, I'm going to give you 20 grand
yeah.
to make 10 songs. How did you react to that? Like, was there like, were you trying to like poker face him and be like, let me think about this. Hold on one second.
Or
were
no,
you
I like, did think about it a lot.
You did?
Yeah. Because you hear, I grew up in New York. You grew up in New York. Mm-hmm. Like you gotta be smart
mm-hmm.
or you're gonna get trampled on.
Yeah.
Like so I heard all the horror stories. I did my homework. Like the thing is that I've read everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything that comes out about rap music, about the music business, about
yeah.
New York City, about all like I've read it all 2 and 3 times. So it's like even in these crazy moments where it's like, holy shit, this is happening, I'm still like, okay, but now I got to be smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could write a record that, you know, I make 20,000 and they make a million if it pops. Like, and that's not right. So I had to make sure things were right.
Yeah, okay.
But I was still very excited, yeah.
Okay, and then with the royalties plus the 20K, you know, like...
Now I'm... So
how
so,
often do you get paid on royalties? Monthly, quarterly, annually?
4 times a year.
So quarterly?
Yeah, quarterly.
Okay. And is the 20 plus the quarterly royalty payments enough to live off of?
No.
Okay.
I mean, depends how you're living, but for someone trying to make things, no.
Okay.
For someone trying to make things, like have a decent life, like take your girl out, like look kind of fresh, like no, it's not enough.
Which is important for a musician.
I think like, that it's really important. Yeah.
But also
just for life. Like if you're... you know, 20 something and you can't buy a new pair of sneakers like every few months, you feel like shit. Like
mm-hmm.
you, like if you can't take your girl out, like you feel like shit. Like it's no way to live.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And then out of those 10 songs, did anything hit?
So very quickly, like they put me in touch with Flume. So that was so that's how like the Flume record happened.
Okay.
And this
so
was
the
like
Flume, you did a collaboration with Flume.
Yeah. So Flume was a nobody
uh-huh.
and they sent me this beat and I thought the beat was like, okay. But I was like, okay, like, they were going to pay me to write to it. Mm. They were going to pay, like, the whole thing was going to be just paid. And I was like, sick.
Okay.
So that was actually, like, if I've made any mistakes, which I don't consider it a mistake at all, mm-hmm. but I didn't go super hard on that contract. Mm-hmm. And that song became really big. So
that's Murphy's Law.
Exactly. But you have to have some of those.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know.
Yeah, that Flume song became, like, a global hit.
And here's the thing. I have publishing on it, but I don't have the master side.
Uh-huh.
So, like, he went and made a lot more money than me.
Break that down, though.
With songs, it's really, like, you have to think about it. It's very confusing. But basically, like, imagine 100% twice. So, okay. like, 100% master and then 100% writing. Mm-hmm. So the master is, like, performance, and the publishing is usually, like, the writing.
The words.
The words.
And the master is typically the beat.
The master is, like, it makes sense. He's supposed to own the master because it was his record.
Right.
But
and you own
if I was a bigger artist or if I had more, what?
You own the publishing because it's your words.
Well, we share the you're supposed to share everything.
Okay.
Like, even the producer gets publishing mm-hmm. on his own track. But the thing is that if I was a bigger artist, I could have been like, well, I want half the master.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or if you don't get half the master, then they can, like, if they want the whole master, they pay you an even more upfront. Yeah. So that's what they did. They paid me mm-hmm. upfront, mm-hmm. but it wasn't that much.
Right.
So, but that's you also did completely fine.
Yeah, in hindsight, you wouldn't have thought that particular record would have blown. Like,
but then here's the thing. Then Flume blew up.
From that.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Well, not from, he was a crazy, like, he was doing his thing crazy. He was, like, touring everywhere.
Yeah.
But that was one of his biggest records, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the beginning.
Right.
And, but it just became kind of weird. Like, the way they spelled T-shirt, I didn't like the way they spelled T-shirt. It was, like, all these things where, like, they really did not care. But I got it, because I was really nobody at that point.
Right.
And I just had no, you know, no power.
Yeah.
Like when it came.
I remember back then you told me that, like, there was a big performance that he was doing, like a big concert.
Yeah, a lot.
And, of course, he's playing your song, meaning, like, there's a big portion of this song where you are supposed to rap on it.
Well, the thing is, he gave me a bare-bones beat, and I created a hit record, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a number one in the States, but it was, like, number two outside the States. Mm-hmm. Like, in Australia, it was, like, number two record. Like,
yeah.
So you go to certain parts of the world, and it's a huge record.
So you would expect that if he's going to perform this record live in an audience, that here comes Shirt walking out.
I did want that. But I also understood very quickly that, like, if I gave, you know, like, as of right now, I'm not going to necessarily bring out, not at first.
Uh-huh.
If I do a record with someone, I'm not going to necessarily, like, my job is to make sure I get popping. His job was to, like, get popping, which he did. So he was, like, not trying to bring T-shirt from Queens out to perform with him, like,
okay,
because you don't want to take the, you know, the, like, the focus spotlight. And the spotlight off
and there's
yourself.
Expense too, you'd have to get paid for it and
exactly.
everything.
So they just, like, just play. So he did all these huge shows mm-hmm. where I'm not there, and it's literally everyone in the audience is, like, rapping every word.
Right.
It's crazy.
That's so weird.
Yeah, but it's fine. I can perform the record if I want.
Okay.
Like, later, or, like, these mm-hmm. next couple shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's good that you see it now from a business standpoint of you understand his perspective. I think at the time you were probably a little bit salty about it.
I was a little salty, but I did understand. And other people were more salty. Like, my guys in the publishing company, like, they were, like, really, like, trying to get me on the shows mm-hmm. and the management was, like, ignoring us, and we were just like, and I was like, yeah, he's not gonna do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's fine.
Man, humble pie never goes down easy. Fact is, Shirt shows real maturity here. But a lot of creatives might get really sour about this. I mean, you basically construct a hit for someone else, got paid measly, and got no props. That's enough to make someone go crazy. But like Shirt here, know your role and understand what it's like being in the shoes of the other man and have the patience to wait your turn. Don't worry, because the same people you see going up the ladder are the same people you see coming down.
Okay, so you get this deal, you're living a little bit, and now, of course, what you're trying to do is get signed by a bigger label, like a real big label, and get a deal. How did that process go?
I mean, my thing from the beginning was, like, I actually just need to make money. I don't need a label, I need to make money.
Okay.
Because I felt like if I had... the financial backing, I could do more things and people would come, mm-hmm. and the fans would come. And then if a lot of fans come, that's when, you know, your phone stops, you know, never stops ringing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I understood that like very quickly. Like I didn't grow up in the 80s where it's like, I didn't know, like I grew up in this internet era and I know how these things work.
Right.
So I knew that it would, you know, so I did want a bigger deal, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But basically, you just needed financing to be able to put out your art.
Yeah, because I did have a vision. Mm-hmm. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew who I wanted to be. I was writing records for years. So mm-hmm. it's like, I just want, like, yeah.
Yeah. So did you, other than trying to get signed, did you try to get money in other ways?
Yeah. So I did everything to make money.
Like?
I sold art. There's a song where I say I sold drugs, I sold art, I sold weed, I sold, like, I sold everything you could sell. Like,
your body?
I didn't necessarily sell my body, but I have a funny story. It's not for this podcast, but I didn't sell my body.
Of course it's for this podcast.
This girl gave me money once for a cab, to take a cab home, and I didn't take the cab home, and I just took the train. I kept the money. And it was like after sex. You know what I mean? So it's like, I just kept the money. I was like, I don't need to take an $80 cab. Like, I could just keep the $80.
Whoa, $80 cab. Where did this happen? In Vermont?
It was in Holland.
Okay.
Yeah. This is right. Before Uber.
That was a slick move.
No, but when I wrote this song, I was thinking, like, did I sell my sex? Because that's the line. Like, I sold sex. And I was like, that could be considered.
Kinda. Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah, it's close. It's close enough. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, because we've been friends for a while now, I remember some of these meetings that you had with record execs and labels, and like, it looked really, really freaking promising.
It did, yeah.
So tell us about some of these stories. Like, can you mention some of the labels even that like you had meetings with that were
so
good?
I met these people through some mutual friends that were like in the Def Jam like building.
Okay.
So basically, I signed like a management deal, which I never had a manager up until this point. And basically, this young guy, who's a director, really, he was like, you know, like, you're the best. Like, you could be the king of New York. Like, he sold the dream. And he was like, let me manage you. And I'm going to start a management company with this woman from Def Jam. So this woman was like high up in Def Jam. So we went to meet her. I met like everyone in Def Jam. It was like a really big deal. And then I signed to them as like a newly, like a formed management company.
Okay. And to a management company, not to Def Jam.
Right.
Okay.
But they were so close and had ties to Def Jam that it was like, we could probably get a Def Jam deal. So I was like, holy shit, like this is going to happen. So we took Def Jam meeting, we took Atlantic, we had this whole project for MTV and we took it to MTV and all this stuff. But because they were so seasoned, especially this woman, I mean, she's like very good friends with Kanye, Rihanna. She's like at Def Jam for 20 years. Mm-hmm. She's not there now, I don't think. But she had, you know, she has all this confidence. And it was like very much like, you have to be quiet now. And we're going to go in and we're going to get you a crazy deal. And all you have to do is like you come. And you know me. It was tough. But I was like, okay, for the greater good, I'll be quiet. And I sat quiet in a lot of these meetings. And I only spoke when they asked me to and all this stuff. Like, they would coach me in the elevator going upstairs. And I remember thinking, like, a lot of what they were saying sounded super corny. Like, my management team sounded corny. It sounded, like, real thirsty. I felt like we went in there completely wrong.
Mm.
And basically, those deals never happened. And within 6 months, I think the woman especially got, like, embarrassed because she was so close to all these people and everyone was like, no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no deal.
when you signed the management deal, was there hesitation on your part, like, this feels a little off? Like, do I really need this?
There wasn't a hesitation because I've heard so many different types of stories. There is no one way to get, you know, anything.
Yeah.
So I felt like maybe this is my way. Maybe this is, you know, and it was a really interesting way into these buildings because it always helps.
You can't just walk into Def Jam on your own.
Of course not. No, right. No. So it really helps to have somebody so seasoned, but, it, you know, it's like a...
And what was their take on the management deal?
So this is something that on the management deal, what do you mean?
Yeah, for them to be, they said I want to manage.
I think it was
you.
Like 20% or something like that.
But
like something
if they
normal.
Never get you anything, they never get paid.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But I remember thinking when I did, you know, when I was asked direct questions, that's when I was me.
Yeah.
And I love art. And it's like, they are, you know, they don't have art. Like, the rappers that are signed to Def Jam are like rappers, you know? And I feel like all those meetings, mm-hmm. a lot of those people looked at me like I had three heads. Because I was going in like, oh yeah, like I see things like this. And I was like quoting artists and like, just, it was not going well at all. So I feel like they were like, yeah, we don't know what to do with this kid.
Yeah, and probably the woman didn't really know what to do with you, which was why she was like, just stay quiet.
Exactly.
That's crazy that you're going into a meeting to sell yourself and they're saying, shut up.
Yeah.
Don't say a word.
Yeah.
It's insane. So paint a picture of what these meetings
were
like.
People will use their experience to like fucking shut things down. Like if... How can I tell this woman anything? She's been in the business 25 years. She's been on the teams of hit records for mm-hmm. 25 years. Mm-hmm. Like, can't tell this woman anything.
Yeah, right.
So it was like talking to a wall.
Mm-hmm. Paint a picture of what these rooms look like. Like, we're in a boardroom.
Yeah.
They're playing
your
music. A couple
of ballrooms. They're playing things. They're, yeah, some suits.
Suits playing rap music.
Yeah.
And then somebody else explaining who you are to
the
suits. Yeah,
while I'm sitting there.
While you're sitting in the room.
Doing a bad job. Like, not even saying the right thing.
You were probably wanting to burst. Just be like, hold on, let me just fucking stand on the table.
Those were really tough. Yeah.
Wow.
And then nothing would come from it. And then they would somehow blame me. You know what I mean? And that's just how it went. Like, over and over again. And I was like... And very quickly, it was like, well, nothing's happening. Uh-huh. I don't want to be with you guys. You guys are like... don't like the way I do things. That's the other thing. Like, every time I've gotten partners, and this is happening to this day, where every time I've gotten partners, I don't think they even know how crazy I am. And it's like, I really need someone where I can email them at 3 a.m. mm-hmm. and they, I don't know. I've yet to meet my manager mm-hmm. or my agent or whatever I'm going to have, like my consigliere. Like, I've yet to meet that person.
That can match your level of...
Or just like somehow know how to deal with me where it's like, I'm being heard, my ideas are being heard, but also like you're teaching me along the way. Like, I'm not saying I know everything, but I at least want somebody where it's like, you know how to deal with someone like that. Because I feel like I do have some great ideas and it's like... Every time I've gotten partners, I've tried to this is who I am, and it's gone weird.
Well, I have a hypothesis as to why that might be happening to you.
Okay.
It's because managers generally, if you're a manager, right, your main job is to expedite and finish the project in a timely manner on budget.
But what's the project if you're managing an artist? His life? Like,
get your stuff out there in the fastest way possible. So they're trying to package your soul, essentially, into a way that fits into like this sort of McDonald's like system.
Yeah.
And so when you come out with like a crazy 50,000 foot idea, they're like, noted, but let me shrink that down so that like Tom, Dick, and Harry get it now.
Yeah.
Which is why you feel like they're not listening, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people need... If I come to them with a big idea, a lot of times a big idea, you can get out a big idea in like a small little paragraph.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that aren't artists or maybe that work with artists, they try, like a big idea scares the shit out of them. And if every single base is not covered in this huge idea, they don't want to go through it.
Yeah.
But my thing is like, you can experiment. You can do little things. Like I just did this idea last week where... the idea was to give a kid's rides home playing the album. So I got a Range Rover and for like 6 hours, like it was on my IG where it's like, comment in the comment section, like where you are. I'm going to try to map out a thing where I pick, you know, like anyone up, bring them to wherever they want. And in that time, I'm playing the album.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blasting the album.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was this great thing. And I brought that to some people and they're like, yeah, we could do this. It's just like, yeah, it's like, if I wait for them, it's going to be a year. Uh-huh. And it's like, no, I'm doing this afternoon. And they're looking at me like, no, you can't do this. Like, we have to fix it. I'm like, no, like.
No, the car's downstairs.
No, the car's downstairs, literally. So my thing is like, we can do it on a bigger scale. I'm cool with that. But that doesn't mean we can't do it this afternoon. Like, and also, doing it this afternoon we know how to move forward. Because mm-hmm. so basically I did it.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
And the kids that got to experience, it wasn't that many. Mm-hmm. I think I ended up doing like 5 kids at mm-hmm. the end of the night. I was trying to do like 20.
Yeah.
But it was impossible. Mm-hmm. But the 5 kids that experienced that, now I did that.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. Those kids had an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. Like literally, it was kids I never met.
Yeah.
That I'm picking them up. They're in the back seat. And I'm blasting the album for them the night it comes out.
Yeah, it's dope.
They're never going to forget that ever in life.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I never, you know, I never do anything else in my life, they're never going to forget that. Yeah. So it's like, I wanted to make that happen. I wanted that to exist. And then also like, who's to say I'm alive in a year? Who's to say any of us are alive in a year? But like, you do it for 5 kids, it exists.
Why did it take the whoever, I assume
because
you
want to,
because
people are scared, it's too much.
Why did they want to take them a year to do? What was there?
The year is exaggerating, but like, it's definitely like
liability. Like they're afraid
a lot of stuff. Yeah, but also they want to make it bigger. Yeah. You know, so the bigger version of that is you pair with like a Mercedes Benz.
Uh huh.
And so we actually, after I did that, I have some friends that were like, "Dude, like this is another fucking genius idea. Why didn't you tell us beforehand?" And I'm like, "I just came up with it a couple days ago."
Yeah.
And they're just like, "Well, let's try and do the next one even bigger." Mm-hmm. So we already reached out to Mercedes Benz.
But it's important that you did it and you showed that it worked.
Yeah, and also the bigger one is going to be different. If we get Benz to give us like 10 cars, which is the idea,
mm-hmm.
to do like crazy routes where all these kids, it's not going to be me driving.
Yeah.
It's going to be a different thing. It'll still be sick and dope, but like, I can still do it this afternoon. We can start. And a lot of people just, they're very scared.
Yeah.
Of a lot of things.
Right. Did anyone say like, well, what if you get into a car accident with the kid?
I was even thinking that. Like, that's tough. That's really fucking tough. Like, what if we get into like a horrific car accident? And like, if I didn't do that, that kid would be alive. Like, I was thinking that.
But you thought about it, but then you said, yeah, fuck it.
I mean... Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
They get into Uber. I mean, yeah, it's tough. If we get into it, it gets tough. But like, I don't know.
Right. Let's talk about some of these other small sort of like experimental projects that mm-hmm. you did. And one of the ones that's most notable that sort of like hit the internet pretty hard was you basically bootlegged the New York Times to write a story about you down to the author. Like you even bootlegged the author's name.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so
you can't put like a nobody name. It's the New York Times. Like you got to get the guy that writes about rap for the Times. Like that's the name you got to put.
Okay, break down this idea.
The idea came because there's an artist named Kenneth Goldsmith, who is like a conceptual artist, a poet. He was the first like the poet laureate of MoMA. He's like performed for the Obama White House. Like mm-hmm. He's like this amazing, amazing guy. And I found his work and his writings and like what he teaches. And basically what he teaches is that like all great writing has already happened. Great sentences have already been written. So why are we writing new ones? Why don't we use the ones that have already been written just in different contexts?
Mm-hmm.
So this fucking idea blew my mind. And he's like a student of Marcel Duchamp.
Mm-hmm.
Duchamp is like... Many people say they're like the student of Duchamp. I am a student of Marcel Duchamp. So this is like, you know, a conceptual artist from like the 20s that basically like, you can't say enough about this guy. Like for art, he's like a god.
Okay.
So he's a student as well. So when I found this guy's like his teachings, I was very just super excited. So I had an album dropping, which was the rap album.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much was still being ignored by all publications and everything.
By the way, the title of your album is the rap album.
No, it's just rap. Yeah. It's just rap. That's the name of the album. Rap. But I wanted it to be like, what else is this? Like,
so
this
should live as like. It'd be like if Iron Maiden made an album called Rock.
I think it'd be an iconic album. Like, what if that album was sick and they made the rock album? Like, that's what I was thinking. Like, this is the rap album.
All right, so Shirt makes. Rap.
Yeah, so the rap album was at that point done.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking like, damn, I want to premiere it, but nobody cares about me. Like the publications, like nobody's giving me the time of day.
Right.
So I was thinking I also study how like, when I say I've read a lot, like I really read a lot. So I've been studying just how like we consume art and we consume things and like, and I really felt like my fans needed something. You know, a fan really loves it when something great happens for an artist that they love. Because it's something they can get behind. Yeah. Now, if you're telling your friends about an artist and they're like, who the fuck are you talking about? But then if you say like, no, this dude, that dude I was telling you about is in the Times now. Like, now their friends are going to pay attention. I knew my fans wanted something like that. Mm-hmm. But no one was going to give it to me. So basically, I came up with the idea one day of like, let me just... So I went, this has happened a lot, I went to like the GoDaddy site to look for like websites, and I found that NewYorkTimes.LA was available, and it was like $10, and I was like, I bought it. Mm-hmm. And then I thought to myself, I could just screenshot the New York Times page and then take that screenshot into like a Photoshop, just change a few things, make it look similar, and literally like, you can go to NewYorkTimes.LA and it looks exactly like it. Mm-hmm. So then I devised this whole thing, and basically I didn't even tell my friends. I wanted to see what would really happen. It was also an experiment, just like the Uber thing. Just like, it's experiments in real time. Like, so I didn't tell my friends. I think like basically just my girl knew maybe. Mm-hmm. And one morning, just in all capital letters, I was like, New York Times. And like literally.
And you had the link.
Yeah, the link to New York. And I also had a theory.
But you wrote an article.
Right. Sorry. So basically for the article, what I was going to do is take the Goldsmith teachings and dissect, you know, the best articles about like the most mysterious guys, like Jay Electronica, Jay-Z, like Nas.
Yeah.
The guys that I really think that I'm in like line with maybe, but and just take paragraphs and build this story out of paragraphs about other artists.
Okay.
Now, this is a very hard thing to do, and I still wanted it to tell my story. Yeah. So I'd say now that it's like 85% of that is like that concept. And then like the other is just like me like
filling it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also took an author's name.
Yeah. John Caramonica. Yeah. Because John, he's the one that does it.
For those who don't know, John Caramonica is
the resident rap writer at the Times.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he's very like,
he's academic, an iconic dude. Yeah. Iconic, yeah. Academic, but he's really the guy. Like if you get your shit reviewed by him, it's like you made it.
He's like, just so you guys who are listening, like he's not like 5-star thumbs up, thumb down. He like writes fucking dissertations rap albums, right?
And a lot of it's really smart. I probably agree with a lot of the stuff that he says. Like it's really good.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So John Caramonica, you wrote in his name.
Right. So, I put the link. So, of course, you got to put his name because it's like that's what makes it official as well.
Yeah.
So I put the link up and it literally fucking just took off. My fans went crazy. Even people that were like in the cut as fans, they came out the bushes and they were like, yeah, like super dope. Very quickly, I was like, yikes. Like, I'm going to have to like, now the people that know me, they're going to feel it's fucked up because it's not real. But in doing it, I knew that it becomes real in a different way. It still exists. It still lives. It's a funny thing.
Well, let me ask Shirt the Artiste now. Mm-hmm. When you did that, were you thinking like, everyone's going to know this is fake and they'll appreciate the jokery of it? Or were you really...
No.
You weren't really trying to pull the...
No, of course not. No. Because even in the article, it says the type of dude who would fake a New York Times article.
Ah.
So I even put clues in the thing. But the whole thing was meant to be like... this obvious experiment that I knew later on I would talk about, and I would, and it was this thing. But also, at this time,
but you had to know people might get pissed too.
Pissed? How could people get pissed? You did. That's crazy.
There's like, articles. How whack is your life? I read articles on other blogs that are like, this fucking guy faked.
Yeah, but they're not really pissed. They're that came through. That was a paying job. They had to write it. The publication wanted this angle.
Yeah.
Instead of like lauding me, they wanted to like, let's make fun of him.
Right.
And that's not personal. Like, I don't care about that.
Okay. I'm glad you take it. Just like, brush it off. I can't be.
And also, again, if you're pissed, what the fuck is your life? Like, what are you pissed about? I come from nothing. I'm like nobody. What am I supposed to do? Mm-hmm. People shoot people to get notoriety.
Right.
I can't do like a high-minded like art thing.
True.
Shit is fucked up. Like there's no, like, so anyone that, and I saw some shit too, like where people were like, I don't know, are they fucking, is this like a hot take? Are they doing this just for like retweets? Like, or are you really angry? And if you are, like, yikes, like who are you? Like how whack is your life? Like,
yeah.
My bad. Like.
Right. So that really got a lot of exposure for you.
A lot. Like NPR did a real article then like a
NPR did an article about it.
Like a huge article about it.
Yeah. About the About the stunt or about the album?
The stunt, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But also, like, even in the article, I made sure, I knew that it would be read a lot. Like, every time I do something that I know is going to be, you know, nowadays it's like, you know, more often than not, but every time I know a lot of people are going to watch something or listen, I try and inject, like, it could be fun and rap shit. I love rap shit. But I try and put real shit in there that can last and a kid can fucking eat and take to the bank. Mm-hmm. Not just the fluffy, not just the surface level shit. So, like, even in that article, if you read that article, it is about me. Mm-hmm. I only chose, that's the whole thing about the Goldsmith, Marcel Duchamp, like, the choice of an artist is huge.
Yeah.
Someone else would have chose something else. Mm-hmm. The choice becomes, like, who you are.
The choice is the art.
The choice is the art.
Yeah.
So it's like, that article is about me.
Right.
As everything that I do like that.
Did John Caramonico reach out?
Never.
Never.
Do you know his reaction?
This guy Jeff Staple once told me something, but that's all I have.
What did I tell you? Remind me.
I think you, I don't know how close you guys are, but you definitely know each other in some way. And I think you said that he was, I actually forget now. Did you say that he was into it or, I don't even know.
Okay. Never mind.
He never reached out. I haven't spoken to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another experiment of yours.
Okay.
Which is sort like, I dare say it's genius in a way. But it's the Nike Adidas project, let's call it, right? Where you simply started taking shirts and putting Adidas trefoil logo and the Nike swoosh together as if they collaborated.
Yeah.
Talk about this.
I remember thinking everyone takes these logos and they put like different names. Instead of Nike, it's Mikey and like all these different things. Or like people do stuff with the Adidas thing. Yeah. And that was happening a lot.
Yeah.
But I felt like, and then I Googled it, and no one had ever, to my knowledge, I could be wrong, no one had ever just put the logos as is next to each other.
Yeah.
And I felt like that's a t-shirt that has to exist. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. So I did it. I made one, and I wore it. And the day I wore it, everywhere I went, old people, young people, literally people were stopping me on the street like, I mean, people from across, I was in Harlem, and this guy across the street, I say this story a lot, he called out, and he was just like, there's hope for the world yet. Nike Adidas, there's hope for the world. And I was thinking, like, and even, like, a grandmother can look at this, and a grandmother knows there's been competition there forever. Uh-huh. Nike Adidas are separate entities, separate companies. So to me, it was like even a grandmother can look at it, and on some level, it's like the world is getting better. Mm. The world, like, there's hope for the world.
Yeah, and no words to explain it.
Just no. Icons. Yeah. There's hope for the world yet. If these companies can come together, like, what's not possible?
Yeah.
So, very quickly, I was on, like, Instagram. I took the picture. I, like, posted it. Probably sold, like, a couple that day. Mm-hmm. You know, probably made like $120 the first day. The second day, 10 more sold. Mm-hmm. The second, like, and it just went crazy. Mm-hmm. And then I had no connects to publications, nothing. But, Heisner Body, Hypebeast, like all these guys started to come around and they would be like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then I made hoodies and everything. And I thought I was, like, my idea was just to keep making. And then I was really thinking about it because I was like, this can get super, like, cheesy really fast. Mm-hmm. Especially, I mean, people are doing cheesy stuff now with the logos. Like, it's so easy to be. So I really wanted to keep, like, a classicness to it. So I only made the white and black tees to start. Then, actually, it wasn't even. I was really thinking about it from, like, a marketing aspect, too. Like, I think the long sleeve dropped first. Mm-hmm. That was for a few months. Then, by the time the t-shirts dropped, like, it was just crazy, and everybody wanted one. And
okay. So, I think you said no one had done it before, right, when you searched.
Yeah.
I think that my theory on that is because, like, the Nike Adidas logo next to each other required a lot of development in the zeitgeist of pop culture, right? Like, sneakers for many years when we were young were just sports shoes. It didn't become a cultural thing only until like the last maybe decade. Okay. And then there's the other aspect of collaboration, which is like collabs and people putting two logos next to each other all the time. So I think that and that had to happen. And then there's also this like bootleg culture that was happening where people just were DIYing their own shirts.
And that's been happening for 20 years.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So I think all of these universes sort of had to meld to make sense. And I think probably part of the genius of what you did was knowing that it was the right time.
Yeah. I mean, the timing aspect of it is always interesting to me because I consume a lot of this culture. I live this culture. Mm-hmm. So the timing is kind of like embedded. I try not to think about it. I feel like, it's just in me.
Yeah.
And if it feels right, it must be right.
Maybe. I'll give you an example. Like when Run DMC came out with My Adidas back then.
Yeah.
If you, or not you, because you were probably embryo. But if someone put out that shirt, it wouldn't mean anything.
No, I got you. Of course.
Yeah. Right. It took all this other stuff to happen.
Right.
So that I think
also Instagram helped it spread a lot too.
Definitely. Global phenomenon with Instagram. Yeah.
And like, you know, like the Fuck Jerry and the Beige Cardigan accounts?
Yes, Fuck Jerry and Beige Cardigan.
Beige Cardigan, actually, the first like huge, because she had like millions of followers. Mm-hmm. That was the first huge thing on Instagram.
She took a, she just regrammed it.
She regrammed it with no credit.
Yeah.
And I found somebody like 2 days later was like, dude, look at Beige Cardigan. And I looked and it was like 17,000 likes. Mm-hmm. And my name wasn't there. And I was like, fuck. I literally reached out to her and it was like a Hail Mary, like, please. And she was mad cool. And she put my name up and she like regrammed it again. And I got mad followers and it became like a huge thing.
Wow. It's one thing to do Nike Adidas as an art project, but then you started making money from it.
Yeah.
Which now turns you into like
a beast.
No. Financially, maybe, but a bootlegger, like an official bootlegger that in almost any eyes of any lawyer or government should be shut down.
No, depends.
Okay, defend yourself.
I mean, Andy Warhol, Campbell Soutkin, like if you do it in a certain way, I mean, like I got a cease and desist.
From?
Nike.
Okay.
And in the cease and desist, it says something like, you're making fake Nike. And I was like, I'm not. I'm making real Nike Adidas shit. That is its own thing. No one's going to think this is Nike. It's not. It's Nike and Adidas.
Did you reply to the cease and desist?
No, of course not.
So you ignored the cease and desist.
I didn't ignore it. I put down... No. I put down the... So...
You took it down.
I took down the functionality of the site.
Uh-huh.
I wanted the site to stay up for education purposes. Mm-hmm. So I put a little paragraph that was like, this is for education purposes. Mm-hmm. I kept the site up. I bought NikeAdidasShirt.com. Mm-hmm. Like that was available. That was the other thing. Like I came up with the idea. I look at this. It's like the GoDaddy is like, it makes me think if my idea is good or not. Like I was like, if someone has Nike Adidas shirt, the idea's over. They didn't. It's mine. Like it's simple as that. Plus Amazing. It wasn't like a .org. It was .com. Like this is official. So they wanted me to take down the site. I left it up with a little paragraph, but I took off the functionality of being able to buy.
Stuff. Okay.
And then I just looked at it as like, okay, like this is like something that I've done and I'm going to move on. But I kept having ideas for like what this collaboration could look like from a design perspective. Right. And like very, I mean, it's a designer's dream probably. Like imagine you get to like make the capsule collection of Nike Adidas. Like here's the thing. Like it becomes like, what are you going to make? You could make anything. Mm-hmm. What are you going to make? Mm-hmm. So that's the other reason that I kept it very simple with like a black tee, a white tee, a navy blue hoodie, a white hoodie.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But after you got the cease and desist and you shut it down.
I shut it down. I kept having ideas. So like one of the ideas I had was like, imagine, okay, they don't want their logos on it. That's cool. But what about the slogan, right? So it's impossible is nothing, just do it. And then I was like, those two together actually makes a complete sentence. Impossible is nothing. Just do it. So I was like, just put the slogans on the shirt.
Uh-huh.
And now there's no logos. You can't say I'm bootlegging Nike and Adidas. So I sold that shirt and I embroidered it. And it was like, I made them in like 8 colors and like.
And sold those too. And they sold well.
Yeah, sold really well.
Okay. And then you came out with ones where you just put the logos on the shirt, but then you covered the logos in tape.
Yeah, that was like a year after I covered it in tape. Like, I'm still trying to find ways because, like, people want this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. It's fun.
You're basically the most like, annoying person to the lawyers.
I get, I really am trying to find ways around. But also, it's very, you know, very quickly I put it into like an art gallery. Like that summer, mm-hmm. after the cease and desist, I put the final stock of stuff into an art gallery. Mm-hmm. And I had like a one-day pop-up gallery thing where it's like I painted Nike and Adidas logos on these wood things. And I had like the final stock. And yeah. like Highs and the Body, like they came and interviewed me and like all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was just like this thing that I was like, okay, this is going to be my final run.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking like in an art context, maybe not for merch and stuff that you can actually, they could come for you. But if you have it in this art context, it could be this bigger thing.
Like Andy Warhol,
yeah.
Yeah, right. Sure. Okay. Can you say how much you've made from this whole project?
I can't say.
Okay.
It's gotten too out of control. No. No, it's not, you know.
Don't say how the dollar amount. Say what type of car you could buy with the...
No. I can't. I mean, you could buy a nice car.
You could buy a nice car.
For sure.
Okay.
Really nice car.
Okay.
Not a McLaren or something. Okay. Like, something ridiculous, but like...
But a really nice car.
Yeah, really like a, you know, a doctor car. Like a car for a doctor or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
But the thing is that, you know...
So, I gotta say
the thing. The money that I made over... And this is not all at once.
Yeah.
It's like over 2 years, let's say. Mm-hmm. Really just gave me even more... Every time I've been able to make money in this way where it's not just, you know, $200 a week or something. It's gone back into art and it's allowed me to keep going. That was my whole thing. Like, fuck, like I gotta keep going. I gotta keep making stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the only way it's gonna be an actual, I don't know, a career in some way.
Right. But you didn't do it for like a connection to a music project. This is like a whole separate project.
Yes.
Right. And then you recently shot a video where you painted a truck. Like a huge truck,
yeah,
in New York City,
yeah,
with the Nike Adidas logo painted on the side of a truck, like massive.
Yeah.
And then you stood on top of it and rapped.
Yeah, we drove it through the city.
What was the reaction from just people in the streets?
It was really amazing. It became a performance piece in itself. The cameras didn't have to be there. Like that day was, I performed for like 6 hours on this truck through the city.
Uh-huh.
And people were going crazy. I'm not like, you don't have to even know who the dude is. You see this huge truck. You hear the music. Uh-huh. He's rapping on top of the truck. The truck's driving through traffic.
Yeah.
Has the Nike Adidas logo. Your, like, head explodes. You're like, who is that? I'm sure people thought I was, like, so much bigger than I am, I guess. Or just like, fuck, like, what are we seeing? So everyone had their phones out. It was, mm-hmm. like, really crazy.
That's dope.
Really.
And that's really taking it to a level where, like, the lawyers can't do anything about that. That is true performance art.
Yeah.
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 It's amazing.
And the other thing is that if you saw the truck on Instagram, if you followed me and then you saw the truck... I was giving t-shirts out, but for free. Mm-hmm. So that's the other aspect. Like, I started to learn, like, well, I can keep giving this stuff out for free. I'm not making money on it.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, like, this beautiful thing of, like, I've given so many tees out for free.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's my favorite thing to do.
You once told me that if someone slides into your DM and writes a really polite, nice message...
you're
going to
put this public right now?
You'll actually explain it. Go ahead.
I do really respect people that could put themselves out there. So it's like, if you ask me something, I shouldn't be saying
this. You're like so scared to say this right
now.
But
if you ask me something in a real way, I might just say yes. So if you say like, I don't have any money, can I have a shirt free? Like, yeah, you can. Just for asking.
And then you send
it. Yeah, of course. Because like people don't want to ask this stuff. And I want people to like let go of the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And just to like... I don't know, to like, yeah. So I want to reward that, mm-hmm. so that it continues to happen and you kind of have this mentality where it's like, instead of just feeling like the door's going to be like shut in my face, like I want you to feel like maybe the door's going to open for me.
Mm.
And I want you to have that in you to take that with you. The door's not always going to open, but...
Try.
Yeah, try.
Yeah. Just do it because nothing's impossible.
Exactly. That's literally it.
Ba-dum-bum. We got in depth on some of the marketing tactics that Shirt used to get his name out there with whatever means he had available to him. I think the reason why I wanted to dedicate so much time to this is because probably the number one question I get asked is, if I have no resources and I have no safety net, I have no connections in the industry, how can I be down? So the hunger and hustle that Shirt exhibits is so admirable to me. He almost turns the adversity into the fuel to create his ideas.
He's relentless. Even in the face of poor management, lack of funds, lawsuits from corporations, nothing will stop this guy. And by the way, the fact that he's a high school dropout sure as hell won't stop him from getting a master's degree. Get ready for this incredible story.
Okay, so going along the timeline now, you who didn't finish high school, got a GED, but didn't go to any college or university, doesn't have an undergraduate degree, no bachelor's, decided that you think you deserve a master's degree.
Decided is a strong word. It's a, yeah.
Okay, but you're in a master's program
right
now.
I am now, yeah.
Explain how the hell that happened.
So this is what's funny. The people that made fun of the New York Times stunt, whatever. The guy Goldsmith, who I was super, like, that's why I did the Times thing. I wrote him into the article. And in one paragraph of the article, it said something like, who I count as my inspiration.
Okay.
And I love putting, like, different people together. So I think it was, like, Biggie and, like, Goldsmith, which is, like, this Jewish poet and Biggie. It's like, but because I did that, literally over a year later, he was talking at SVA.
Okay.
And I decided to go to the talk. And I was the only kid that looked like me in this, so it was like a very like intellectual, academic thing. And at the end of the talk, I was about to leave. And I was just like, let me just introduce myself. And I waited on this little line because other people wanted to meet him. And I introduced myself when I introduced myself as Shirt. And he was like, wait, what's your name? And I was like, it's Shirt. And he's like, did you do the Times article? And this fucking dude, a year later, tells me that his colleagues at the time, because I wrote him into that article, his colleagues thought it was funny and sent him the article, and he loved it.
Mike, so a year when you were standing there,
head exploded.
Yeah,
but at that point, literally, I'm there, and he loved it so much, he like turns to the crowd that's still lingering after the talk, and he's like, "This kid did like," and he starts telling the crowd, and it's like everyone's looking at me like, "Who the fuck? Like right. How like?" So the next day we like have lunch. He like, cause I'm like, yeah, like I'm trying to do something with my life. Like I have all these ideas. I don't know what to do. And he like instantly was like, he got me.
Mm-hmm.
And we had lunch the next day. I'm showing him everything. He's like, his head is exploding. Cause I'm like showing him everything I'm doing. I'm playing him the rap songs. I'm like, I gave him like the headphones and I'm like playing it from my phone. And he's like, and he like loves rap from the 80s and all this, and so he like he loves the attitude, loves the spirit of mm-hmm. it,
and the artistic angle.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's like a lot of, and we're both students of Duchamp, so it's like this thing. Mm-hmm. It's like we have like this kinship a little bit. So basically, he invited me to speak. He teaches a creative writing class at Penn.
UPenn, University of Pennsylvania,
yes.
Which is an Ivy League school.
Yes.
Yeah.
He teaches a master program.
Okay.
And he had me go like the week after to the class. And like on the big thing, he like, I put all my projects up, and I basically, that class was like me talking to his students, and his students loved it. And basically at the end of the class, he was like, this is the first time I've ever heard these words, but he was like, do you guys think he should like be in a master program? And all the students were like, hell no, like no way. And they're in a master program.
Right.
And they're like $200,000 in debt.
Mm-hmm.
They like are learning all the rules. They don't know. They still don't know what the fuck they want to do. And they're looking at me like, you're free. Like you're already working. You're doing crazy stuff.
Oh, not hell no, because you don't deserve to be in it. Hell
no,
no,
hell no,
because
like, no, like you're decision. Already, yeah, bad decision. Like you're already doing it. He's
wow.
telling them about the Times article. He's yeah. telling them about all this stuff. So they're looking at me like, whoa.
You're beyond.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. But he knew what he was doing, because when he said those words, it like went into my head. And then like a little bit after that, like in the next week or so, we had like a coffee, and he was like, yeah, so, you know, is that something that you'd ever like consider doing? And I was like, how could I do that? Like I dropped out of high school. Like I have a GED, but like, how can I do that? And he was just like, no, like, you know, a master program, especially in art, it's really just about portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And you have projects that you've been working on. So my portfolio at that point, without even knowing, was like diesel,
thick.
Like
yeah.
thick portfolio. So basically, he put me in touch with this with this woman that runs this program,
across the world. And he was also like, would you ever move? And I was like, sure. Because, like, I don't have kids. Like, that's the thing. I try not to have kids. I've tried to, like up to this point, I do want kids. But, like, up to this point, I've really tried to, like, stay lean.
Yeah, and free.
And free, in a sense, where it's, like, at any moment I can make moves. Mm-hmm. And a lot, and, like, we should, like, talk about how important that is. Because, like, a lot of kids can't do that. Because, so that's the thing. If you, like, really want to make art or be free in any sense of the word, like, think about that. For, like, what you're doing. Like, you should, like, pull out of your girl more. Or, like, wear condoms. Like, just, like...
No. Make, don't pull out of your girl more. Wear a condom.
Obviously, that's the thing. Sorry. But, but, like, that's a thing that's, like, very real.
Right. These are decisions that are monumentally changing your
life. Yeah, a lot of people say they want to make art and they want to do that. But then they're, like, having a bunch of kids and, like, all these responsibilities. And, like, no, at that point, your life's not yours anymore. Like...
Okay.
So I made sure. So I was at the point where I could do that.
Yeah.
And I applied and they accepted me. So that's why I say it wasn't a decision.
Did he help in that? Like, did he?
He wrote me a recommendation letter,
which is ridiculous.
And his letter was ridiculous. I still like it's the most ridiculous letter. Like I read it to my grandmother, and my grandma was like, because he put, because you know it's this dude.
Yeah.
And he put my life into like words that like. I didn't even know that that's the way you could write about me. And he did it in this, like, amazing way.
So in a matter of a few weeks, literally, you went from just seeing this guy talk as a spectator, then he notes the work that you did in his honor, announces it to the world, you have coffee, he asks you to speak at his master's class, and then a couple of weeks later, you're going to a master's program in Europe.
Well, I'm applying, and they accepted me.
Yeah. And now you're in that master's program.
So I've been there a year and a half.
And where is it?
In Switzerland. I don't like to say this exact place in Switzerland.
Because it's like a bat cave of a master's program, right?
No, I just, I don't know. I'm kind of weird about certain things. Like, I don't, people don't need to know that this is a small town in Europe. Like, I don't know.
Okay.
You don't have to tell.
You want
to
say the name of the school?
Like, after I graduate, I'll say where I went.
Okay. But I would imagine that at this master's program, there's no one else like you.
Nobody. Well, that's the other thing. They announced to the school that, like, they have this rapper coming. So, like, people... It was weird. I felt a little bit like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, you go to the school and everybody knows Harry Potter is coming. And it's like... The first few weeks were really funny.
And like, it's everyone coming up to you saying, like, yo, spit a verse.
Yeah.
Like, not, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically that.
In their
language. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay. So now you're in the master's program.
I am. I'm a year and a half in. I'm about to be... It's over in August.
Mm-hmm.
So
to most people...
It's gone so quick, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, here you are. You're making music. You're making art. To most people, this is like the promised land. And you're making a lot of more like... You've got your art hat on now much more than your music hat.
That's the way I felt, yeah.
And it almost feels like maybe because you took the music hustle hat off, all of a sudden, what happens?
Maybe.
You but get signed.
But here's what's weird. I'm in this school.
Yeah, you're in this school. And I'm already thinking country.
About visual art before I was in this school. And I was making visual art. I was doing the rap boards around the city and all this different stuff. And so, but yeah, once you go to a school like this, you're now I was like really thinking like, okay, some visual art needs to happen. I need to step everything up. Like,
right. And conceptually too, like you're surrounded by all these conceptual artists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Versus the mode of like, I got to get into Def Jam to get them to sign me at this meeting room. Like, it couldn't be more different.
Very different. Right. And also now I'm in this art context. So I'm also thinking like, what? Like very quickly I was like, well, I'm going to make a rap album here.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I'm going to make my rap album at my master's program.
Right.
Right.
Right. With other visual art and stuff like that. But I'm definitely going to record an album here.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a music studio on campus and they were like, nobody uses it. So it basically became my studio. It's like $1 million studio, but nobody uses it because it's Switzerland. They have like all the money in the world.
Literally.
But nobody uses the music studio except for like a voiceover every now and then for art purposes. There's no musicians at the school.
So they like just gave you the key. Here, this is yours.
No, literally. I just got the key and I just started recording this album. And I made it the same way I made it in my bedroom. I got beats from kids around the world.
Uh-huh.
I craft, you know, I craft like a body of an album. And then I start writing and start recording.
Okay.
Yeah. And then at the same time, I was coming up with all these like visual art ideas, mm-hmm. and you know, the canvas works and sculpting. Like I got into sculpture now.
Yeah.
That I'm really into.
Right.
It's like a lot.
So can you segue into him?
Baldessari. So this past September, I go to LA, and I love LA. I just want to like, I really love it. But for the last few years, every time I go to LA, like Baldessari is someone that I really, really love. Like
John Baldessari.
John Baldessari.
Yeah, he's an artist.
He's an artist. He's in his late 80s. And I think the first time I heard about him was like on Hypebeast, maybe. Mm-hmm. Of like, there was like a Tom Waits interview that he did with John Baldessari that like blew up. It was done really well. It was edited really, really dope. And I found that. I loved his like the wit and his like the thinking behind his stuff. So every time I went to LA, I was thinking in the back of my head, like, somehow I gotta get to John Baldessari.
He lives in LA.
He lives in Venice. He's from Venice. He's very much like in the, he's like an LA artist legend, you know, like LA artist. So he lives in Venice, California. So basically, I, one day I'm at a coffee shop and I decide, let me try to find an email. Now, like, here's the thing. I've always tried to find ways to reach out to people that I enjoy. That's how I know you. Like, I found a way to reach, like, you guys, like, you know, mm-hmm. like an intern thing or something like that. But I try and find like ways
in,
So now that I'm in school, the last year and a half, I've realized that I have like a, it's a pretty sick story. And because of that, I can use that story to get like more things. Mm-hmm. So even though I've had this idea for years, it never felt right to do. And this summer it felt right.
Okay.
So I'm there in September and I'm like, okay, I have this story. So basically I wrote them a paragraph. I found an email, like a, like info@JohnBaldessari.com, that like mm-hmm. some nothing email. And I basically just wrote a cold email. Uh-huh. My little paragraph of who I am, high school dropout, now I'm in this master program, I make rap music, blah, blah. And they reached right back out and said, John would love to meet you.
How long did it take for the reply?
Come by the studio. Like 2 hours.
Wow.
And I remember I got tears in my eyes. I was at a coffee shop. I was with my girl. And we were literally, I'm just like, look what just came through. And it's just like the most unbelievable thing in the world. And they want to meet me like in 2 days. They're like, yeah, you can come just right by the studio. He'd love to meet. So I literally go to his studio.
You probably thought like, this is a joke. Like he'd love to meet.
I could not believe it. Yeah. Right. It was a big deal.
So you go to his studio?
I go to his studio a couple days later. And we talked for like an hour. And like literally he took me all around his studio. He showed me things on his wall. He gave me like little stories about things. He's like a great talker.
Uh-huh.
He's like really funny.
Yeah.
Just a brilliant man. And just like, it was just amazing. You know, I tried to get him to talk like more about rap. He's not necessarily a rap fan. Mm-hmm. He's not like bumping that new, like whatever. But his assistants are all young people, and they love rap music. So mm-hmm. he's like, oh yeah, sometimes they play it in the office. And,
mm-hmm. Did you talk about collaborating?
So I talked to him. So I told him that I was writing this album, that it was pretty much done, and it was called Pure Beauty. And Pure Beauty is like a huge work of his. It's like one of the most like famous works.
But you already knew that you were calling the album Pure Beauty.
Yes.
Okay.
So I talked to him about that. And he was like, yeah, sounds good. Like, that's great. Like, that's awesome. And then I told him that I was, like, writing I Will Not Make Any More Boring Rap. Because his famous thing is I Will Not Make Any More Boring Art. Mm-hmm. And I told him that I've been, like, doing I Will Not Make Any More Boring Rap. He was, like, really into that. He thought it was funny. And then the Pure Beauty, I was like, yeah, I'm going to call the album Pure Beauty. But I didn't know that I was going to use the exact, like, that's his work. That is the canvas. It's a square, and it says Pure Beauty.
I'm holding the
like
album
that.
In my hands right now. But this is only for the album, right?
So that artwork, I only made it for the physical vinyl. Yeah. In digital, it's just the neon green.
Did you recreate this?
So this is exactly what he did. And that's, like, a big thing of mine. I don't like to touch anything. The back has one word difference. When it says everything is purged from this record, it's this painting is the original. But art, no ideas have entered this work.
Okay. But he blessed this.
So not at that point, but he knew that I was making it. And so he said something that was like ridiculous. He was like, because I was like, I'd love to send you something. And he's like, yeah.
if you send me something, I'll send you a piece of art. That's what artists do. They exchange art. And I'm just in my head, I'm like, I'm going to get an original John Baldessari. Like, he's going to get a me, and I'm going to get a John Baldessari. Like, doesn't seem, and I can even exchange. But later on, so at this point, no label was attached.
Yeah.
The album was done pretty much.
You're still unsigned.
Still unsigned. Nobody cares. Right. Like, and basically, a few months later is when the label stuff happened. And then after that, I was like, damn, I wonder if he'd give us the rights to make vinyls. And he did. He like remembered.
This is over an email.
He remembered me, yeah. And he was just like, yeah, like you could do whatever he wants. And he was even like, oh, there was even some ideas that we didn't do where he wanted to like literally collaborate with me and do like a new piece. And I didn't want to do it.
Why not?
We could do like that could be later.
Yeah, it's too
like,
much. Yeah, it's
like
too much.
This literally, is pure beauty.
Literally, that's too much.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah.
But I really had this idea for this concept. And like the other thing is that I was in LA and the next day I had rented out a gallery, or a friend helped me, like he had a gallery space and we mm-hmm. were able to get it for the day. And I was going to do a project in the gallery space. And I didn't really even know what I was going to do. This was the next day after the Baldessari meeting. And I ended up on a huge wall writing, I would not make any more boring rap. Mm-hmm. And have it where I'm playing the album and people could come and they could listen to the album. But really, I'm not even talking to people. I'm painting. And yeah. It was like an interesting thing to me. It's like, imagine you can go to a space or like a listening party with the rapper there. But like, he's not like he's doing something. I'm not just hanging out.
Right.
I'm like painting and you could like watch me if you want. And that's like, but hear my rap music.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that the next day, not even knowing. So it just became like this like poetry. Yeah. Like that's how I look at it. It's just straight poetry, the whole thing.
Wow. Okay. So now you get, talk about now how the signing happens.
So, I've just been doing a lot on mm-hmm. Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that like I'm not just a guy like with selfies or with like, you know, every picture is me. Like it's mostly the things that I see that speak to me in some way. That's what my Instagram is. Yeah. And I also use it as like, I try and like to think about it like the stoop, let's say. Like I'm always like that Nas scene mm-hmm. in Belly when he's talking to the young dude on the bench in Queensbridge. It's like I want my Instagram to serve as like a stoop in that sense where it's like I learned something. Now let me put you on
mm-hmm.
and you take whatever you want from it. But so I've been doing a lot. So on the eve. So this is also just like some poetry shit. Like on the eve of the album dropping on its own through iTunes.
Through you.
Through me.
Yeah.
Like you're an about independent artist right. can release their stuff on iTunes and all that. It's very easy. You go to like TuneCore or something like that will help you. Like, so I did all that and my album was going to come out and I took a couple meetings for it too. When I came back to New York, I took a meeting with Mass Appeal. I'll say Mass Appeal was like kind of interested, but like ignoring me pretty much. And I just decided again, I'm going to put this album out on my own. Like,
right. I'm not like, waiting. I don't care. I'm not waiting for anybody. Right.
So on the eve of the album dropping, I get a DM from like a kid that works for Third Man. Mm-hmm. And he was like, we love you. We've been talking about you for the last year. I love your shit. All the heads love your shit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything happening? And at that point, I haven't even said my album was going to release. Like, it was all going to be like very, at midnight, I was going to go in and like promote it.
Okay, so you get a, go back to, you get a DM from Third, and this time,
literally, yeah.
This time, explain Third Man for people who don't know what Third Man is.
Okay, so Third Man, basically, this is what I knew about Third Man.
When you got the DM, right?
Yes, so Third Man to me is Jack White's label, mm-hmm. Jack White of the White Stripes.
Mm-hmm.
Jack White is one of those, I think, just like pretty well-known rock stars. The White Stripes were pretty huge. They have some huge records.
But also highly respected for the craft.
So super highly respected. Right. To the point where he's really become the guy. So, like, if Jay-Z does a vinyl, he does it with Third Man. He does it with Jack White. Beyonce, just on her last album, Lemonade, she has a song with Jack White.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Beyonce doesn't collaborate. Like,
yeah,
Beyonce's album on vinyl is made by Jack White's company. So, it's like the biggest people in the industry go to Jack White because he's the guy. He brought back. He's credited as bringing back vinyl, the craftsmanship, very musical, can play every instrument. Just
But the other thing that he's known for is, like, he's a nutcase. And the White Stripes is built around, like, the concept of three. And, like, a lot of the videos are only three colors or only one color.
Yeah.
He's, like, very conceptual. Mm-hmm. He's a conceptual artist first.
Right.
He used to make furniture and put, like, little letters in the furniture mm-hmm. of shit like that. So, like, he's, like, this, like, amazing dude. That's what I know about him.
Yeah.
So, even though it was a bit left field, and, of course, like, I'm trying to be respected in the hip-hop world and all that, that stuff took such a backseat to the fact that, no, this is an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And this label is respected for making, like, the physical works. So, I was completely just, like, I was in Berlin mm-hmm. at the time, and literally could not believe it.
Yeah.
We got on the phone that night. I told him I had this record. I sent him the record. It was pretty much done.
Yeah.
It might not have been mastered at that point. No, it was mastered. It was literally dropping the next day.
Yeah.
They were like, we fucking love it. Is there any way? This is like an hour before midnight, and on iTunes, it's going to go live.
Automatically, they're going to go live.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Because I'm a nobody at this point, unless I say it's out, no one's going to know.
Yeah.
So I had some time mm-hmm. at that point. But literally, it came out for a few hours.
Yeah.
They weren't able to, like,
shut it down fast enough.
Yeah. So it came out, but pretty much, I everything that... Our initial talks that night and the next day, I sent them the album. The next day, from what I understand, they played it, like, all morning. And everyone in the label was like, this record is sick.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do it. So I pulled it. It came down. I never said that it was out. And literally, the next few weeks were, like, trying to get the contract right. I'm very proud of, like, you know, this is up. At this point, this is the most updated me. You know,
yeah.
I constantly look at that. Like, right now, this is the most updated us. Like, mm-hmm. so everything we've learned up to this point is embedded in this conversation right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the case for, like, every moment of your fucking life. It's the newest fucking moment,
yeah.
you know? So I learned a lot up to that point, and I put all that into the contract talks. And I did some things that I'm really proud of. Like, I've been trying to think if I should, like, talk about this.
Say it and then decide later.
It's this one thing. It's, because this is after the whole, like, the Me Too movement and everything happening with, like sexual harassment
yeah.
and all these huge people coming down.
Things, yeah.
And I was thinking, like, you know, I don't really know these guys. Like, something could happen. So we actually wrote into the contract that if something comes out, I could just walk away.
Mm. And my lawyer, it voids the contract if something.
And my lawyer was like, they're never going to go for this. And they went for it. And I was, like, very proud. So if something comes out, or if it's, like, something that we don't know, one of the heads of the company, whatever,
you're free.
I could just walk away.
Yeah, amazing.
But it was, like, something that, you know, it's just, like, little things that you... Mm-hmm. And also, I like, own the Masters, which was, like, a huge thing.
Mm-hmm. You don't have a manager this time.
No.
You did it yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is also, like, a family friend. Like, he's the man. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the timing of this particular recording is really, you know, amazing, because we've now listened to your struggle from the very beginning, 9 years old, spitting out your first rap, to now getting signed by Jack White's Third Man Records, right? What's next now? Like, now, do you feel now that you have, like, the keys to the kingdom, and, like, it's just unlimited access to whatever you want to freaking, you know, born out of your brain?
I still don't know. And it's because, I'll be completely honest, we should be really honest, because I want everybody to know if you care about this thing. But, like, I'm still being looked at crazy. And in school, I'm being looked at crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still happening.
Mm-hmm.
And teachers, you know, we'll be in class or in these lectures and we'll be hearing about, like, the possibilities and all this different stuff. But the minute you bring that, they're like, that's too crazy. It's like, how can that be too crazy? Like, I made a huge Matisse sculpture thing, and my idea was to put it on the Rhine River in Switzerland. And it was, like, 17 feet high, extremely heavy. It took, like, a bunch of dudes to lift it, and we got a truck with a lift and all this. And I wanted to put it on the Rhine River and just leave it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you can't do that. Some kid was like, this is Switzerland. Are you crazy? It's going to be gone within the hour. It was up for 42 days. Before it disappeared.
Wow.
42 days. The kid said it would be gone in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'm still bringing people ideas, like the Uber idea I just told you. Like, literally, I can go on my email right now. Like, I'm bringing them ideas. School, teachers, the label. People are still afraid. People are still, like, it doesn't change. So that really taught me something.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't know how, well, obviously I'm not Beyonce. Maybe it does change if you become A-list. Maybe things do change. Mm-hmm. But I imagine on some level they stay the same, where you're still looked at crazy. Everyone's still afraid.
Yeah.
And it's like, it taught me that, like, you know, it doesn't just, these things don't, like, you have to just, you have to have it in you, I think, mm-hmm. where it's like, you just have to be headstrong about your art and how you want. And it's just important that you keep that.
Yeah.
Like, no matter where you go or
yeah,
like who you deal with.
Can you talk about this?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at your album right now. I've got the album, the vinyl in my hands.
You have the limited edition vinyl.
Okay, limited edition vinyl.
Yeah.
And on the corner of it, on the outside, there's a USB drive attached to it.
Yeah.
What is this?
So, okay, so this is basically... there's an idea that I don't want to say exactly, but basically the idea was like, imagine if the music was a player itself. Like, I wanted a way for people... Okay, I'm not going to get super into it, but basically, like, this is like an idea that came from another idea.
Okay.
So this idea is... I wanted a USB on the vinyl because I was thinking to put the MP3s on there, to put the lyrics and production credits in like a PDF, like maybe some videos and stuff like that, as like an extra like thing. And then I was thinking, how can it be attached? And I'm into this zip tie, and the zip tie is having a cultural moment right now with like Virgil and all that. And so I came up with that idea. Now, then it turned into, I had this idea like the 25th hour basically, where I was like, the MP3s and videos and production credits is not enough. I have so many photos, like 30,000 photos mm-hmm. on my iPhone. Mm-hmm. Everywhere I go, every exhibit I go, every museum, every city,
yeah,
I'm taking a million pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I might post one.
Right.
Where are all these pictures going to go? And in the past, I've made videos where, like, you know, the pictures go really fast. Yeah. There's, like, a video automatic that does that. So I've tried to get the pictures out in some ways. So the idea was, what if I gave these pictures away?
All the pictures on your phone.
So that's impossible. It's too much. But I gave 1,000 photos. And again, it becomes about the choice.
Yes.
So I chose 1,000 photos. Mm-hmm. And I did it the longest way possible. Like, my girl and, like, other people are like, you know, you could do that faster. It's like, no. Like... the only way to do it is go through 30,000 photos and the stuff that hits me in the gut,
uh-huh.
take out.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Okay.
So on this USB comes with 1,000 photos mm-hmm. that hit me in the gut
mm-hmm.
and that I feel like had an impression on me when I saw it. And the thing is, like, a lot of these photos, unless you did my exact, like you travel a lot, you weren't at these exhibits.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are closed now.
Yeah.
Some of these things come from collections that will never be open again.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's like, even a kid that's broke, that's in their bedroom, that they feel they have no way, you know, where are they going to get the inspiration from? You talk about the biggest inspiration is traveling, but that's like a blessed thing.
Yeah.
No one can travel. Pretty much no, like 1%, 0.5% of the world can travel. Like mm-hmm. no one can travel.
Yeah.
So it's like the next best thing is like, if you can travel, somehow get the information back
mm-hmm.
to the kid. That was basically me.
Yeah.
Like that kid in the bedroom with like not enough money for a Metro card, like let alone a museum fee or. And the thing is, I don't like when people are like, oh, it's only a few dollars, you know, or like the Guggenheim, it's free on Fridays. It's like, no, like if you're broke, I don't like for people that have been broke, they know what I'm talking about. Like, you don't want to go nowhere. You feel like shit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go places. So like, even if it's free Guggenheim Fridays, like, you're not going.
Right. I think a lot of people underestimate that.
It's like, crazy. Yeah. So like, I constantly have to like really like, cause I was embarrassed to go places. Mm-hmm. When you're broke, when you have $3 in your pocket, like, You don't want to be seen. You don't want, like, you want to disappear. So it's like, you can be home.
Yeah.
But have this USB. And then the other thought is like, this version is also going to be in record stores.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is like, if you want, you could bring your laptop, just hook it up to the thing, take everything off, walk out the store. Like,
right, because the whole album is on this as USB well. Drive.
Yeah.
So how did you convince the label?
So they're awesome. Yeah, okay. They're awesome.
Because you're telling the label, I want to potentially give the whole album away to anyone who comes in with a laptop.
They're really dope in that regard. And let me just give you an example of how dope they are. So when you make a vinyl, this legal line has to appear, right? And the legal line is like, what is that? Like the duplication of this recording is not allowed, blah, blah,
blah. The copyright laws.
I had them change it to, duplication of this recording makes you a fucking legend, dog. Your rights reserved. Not our rights reserved. Your rights reserved.
Wow.
Manufactured by Thurman. So I told them that and they were like, yeah, let's do it. And then let's not even say this, but when you get the record, you'll realize like there's like things in the groove. Like that's a logo that you'll recognize.
There's a swoosh
into
the groove.
That's just for a few. It's for everyone. But that's just
the Adidas logo.
So there's like that wasn't even like that was the label like being the label. Like they love to push things. In the music business, as far as labels go, they are amazing and they are gonna like push things because they're run by Jack White, who's fucking ridiculous. Yeah. A madman. So
there's also no track list or anything.
Yeah, that was on purpose. I just wanted it like blacked out.
Amazing.
Okay,
so I wanted to ask you, I don't think you actually answered the question. Now that you have this backing, like, what is next for you now?
So I want to promote this record. Mm-hmm. We have a video that's coming out tomorrow that people are going to see called 180 Grams, which is me going to Detroit, which is where their plant is.
Yeah.
And basically doing, like, quality control. Like, I made sure that everything was dope. That was, like, very important to me. I was like, I got to go to the plant.
Uh-huh.
And I have to see this stuff. So we have that video coming out. It's basically like a short documentary, but also like a record off the album, like I'm rapping.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a music video type thing. That's coming out in the next couple of days. There's another video that's coming out. I went to Africa last year and we filmed a video for Woman is God in Sierra Leone, Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like...
But that was even pre you getting signed.
That was, way pre-signed.
So you paid for that yourself.
See, here's the thing. Once I'm in Europe in school, I really became a beast. Because, like, at that point, flights, like you can get flights around the world for, like, $20, $30 in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I did fly from Switzerland to Africa. I flew from, like, the richest country to the poorest country.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 10 days in Africa with this amazing family that are like some like our like the family friends, Jenna, what's up? We filmed a video there for a record off the album that's gonna come out still. So I'm gonna promote this record a lot, and just make sure that a lot of people hear this record.
And how much more school do you have?
6 months.
Okay.
And I also it's a 2-album deal.
Okay.
With Thurman, so I have another album. And what's interesting about that album is that that's going to be the album that I made as a signed artist.
Right.
So who knows? I might get a Jack White beat. Like, you know, like that album will have some more things going on.
Yeah. And are you coming back to America?
I'm really thinking about it now because there's a lot of opportunity here. But like, I'll give you an example. Like me being in Europe right now, I just got some news a couple of days ago that's like so dope. And it's because I'm in Europe right now.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I'm going to go out with Jack. And he wants me to open up for him. Which is, like, fucking ridiculous. Like, but we're starting in Europe. And it's because I'm in Europe right now.
Right.
So it's like...
So, yeah.
So I really feel like the plan was to maybe go to Berlin right after school. Because I do have an apartment now. And I'm like have all these like big artworks. And it's like, how am I going to like bring those back to America? So my idea was to get like a space in Berlin that I just pay to rent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cheap. Like for people like listening, you can get a nice apartment for like $700 a month.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. you can't really do that. Just like a normal person can't just do that because you can't just live in Europe. But actually, I just realized through my dad, I can get like the citizenship for Europe as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's some things that, yeah, there's some things that are just like, I don't know.
All right. So if now you had the ability to talk to like a younger version of yourself, what advice would you give that person?
Keep going. Keep going. Like I say it all the time, like you, like if you're making stuff and you're reading and you're like, you like are trying to be a good person, just stay alive. Mm-hmm. Everything will work itself out if you just keep, you stay alive. Cause like if you die, your work, there's not going to be any new work from you. So it's like everything, you know, like, so stay alive, mm-hmm, and like keep working and keep making stuff. That's what I would say. I mean, if I could go back and tell the younger version of me, like, yeah, like, chill out. Like, don't. But I don't even want to say don't worry to the, because, like, you don't want to fuck things up. Because if I told my younger self not to worry, who would that kid be? Maybe in jail.
Yeah.
Maybe fucking dead in the street. So, like, the worrying I did as a younger guy, like, was good. Mm-hmm. What I would say is, like, read. Like, you should, like, find the people. I have a project that's coming out probably at the end of summer, which is like really a visual project, but it's like this really big idea where it basically is like the 100 people that like made me who I am. And I'm talking about like artists, rappers, writers, whatever. You should find your 100 and you should like read everything about them. And like just, you can copy them to a T. It won't be the same. You, if you copy them to a T, it'll never be the same. It'll be yours. So if you just copy them to a T, it'll be this amazing thing. I've copied people to a T sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I don't mean like project-wise, because then you'll just be a biter. I mean like if someone's doing a project, like you can't just do the same thing. Or, but even that's an idea. Mm-hmm. but, I mean, to be honest.
Yeah.
But like imagine a kid, you came out with a new collection, and he made the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And he offered it, like you'd at least like shout him out on Instagram if you found it. Like there's really no fucking rules. Mm-hmm. And I just mean like to find the people that really inspire you and just like study them.
Side note, I would actually sue you if you did.
Yeah, I mean you specifically would sue people. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, well thank you, man. That
is
was
that
awesome.
It?
Yeah,
the unless business
you have,
of hype.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
The business of hype. Sure.
Yeah.
Jeff Staple.
You're like a student of the game. It's amazing.
I really am. I love it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Man, I know that was a long one, but I hope you enjoyed this in-depth episode with Shirt. And this is our 13th episode of The Business of Hype. And guess what? It was the first one that was taped in my hometown of New York City. It just goes to show how worldwide this podcast is, and I hope you're enjoying the global perspective on the subject matter. As always, thank you so much for listening. You can find out more about the show and listen to past episodes at hypebeast.com/radio. And subscribe to us wherever you listen. I personally use Overcast. Reach out to me on Twitter. I'm @JeffStaple. You could check us out on the web at businessofhype.com. And you could email me any questions or comments you might have. Email to questions@businessofhype.com. The Business of Hype is directed by Daniel Navetta, edited and produced by Bright Young Things. You could check them out at byt.nyc. Mixing was done by Alex Christensen, and this was recorded at Sibling Rivalry Studio in New York and on location in Midtown Manhattan. I'm Jeff Staple, and you've been listening to The Business of Hype on Hypebeast Radio.